Tondo is attending a meeting in Gauteng and then Mr. Talisa.
Thank you, honorable members. The purpose of our meeting today is to allow the minister to brief us on a municipality affected by the VBS bank and many other issues that they may then arise in the engagement with the minister on some of the issues that he has visited some provinces, they have observed, and then we have a discussion that allow members to post questions and then engage on the report that is going to be presented. And then that is the really main purpose of our meeting today. That's why we wanted to have sufficient time for the engagement with the department, with the minister. They have been visiting many municipalities just besides those that are affected. He may also raise some of the issues that he's observing in many municipalities and then and see how else we can do all of us, particularly the committee that is conducting oversight function of the department. And we are very happy that the minister is here and the team is here. We should invite the minister to take his time and also to make a presentation. Again, it's VBS, but there are other issues that he may raise and that are pertaining the local government or the state of local government, the main other areas that they've visited, will allow that for minister to take liberty to give us a lot of information and also what are the issues that are facing us there. We will invite the minister to take the platform and then to take us through what are the issues, and we'll allow members to engage with the report. If there are recommendations that members want to put forward, they'll put forward in engagement, and then we'll close the meeting. Honorable Minister, when you are ready, we will invite you to take the platform and then give a report and then give the issue that you want us to take care of.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, I presume it's permissible to be seated as we speak. Thank you very much. I will largely focus on the issue of the impact of the VBS investment and the subsequent fraudulent activity that has been discovered. I have a presentation which I wish to share with the members, and I will go through that presentation, and here and there I will deviate to just deal with issues that might not be contained directly on that report. I have here with me the members of the team in COCTA, and I'd like us to start by going through that presentation. If you go, I think, straight to page 4, it basically deals with the issues around the Municipal Finance Management Act, which lightly guides about the issues of managing finances and in particular the issues of conducting cash management and investment and how to and the issues of investing the monies which are not immediately used. Then if you move on, the number of regulations, and there's regulation 6 that's being referred to here in particular. 6C talks about deposits with banks registered in terms of the Bank Act 1990, Act 94 of 1990. This is the one that we use as a relevant act to guide on how to charge on the actions that have been taken by the municipalities. The municipalities invested funds with mutual bank, which is contrary to the Municipal Finance Management Act and municipal investment regulations, and that's what we have indicated. As we speak now, the reports we have is that we have Merafong and Gauteng, which has put in over 50 million, Western District Gauteng 74 million, Morotele local municipality 50 million, Madibeng, 31.5 million. Maikeng, 83.4 million. Dr. Ruth Sokomotsi Mukpati, District, 150 million. Makado Limpopo, 62.7 million. Greater Kiani, 153 million. Collins Chamane, Limpopo, 122 million. Now, Elias Ntwale, that 48,000, basically, they just, it's an accounting issue. They expected, they got their money in and their money was brought back with all the interest. However, when they calculated, they thought they were shortchanged by that much amount. So we just keep it there just for accuracy's sake. Zembe District, 316 million. Ephraim Mukhale, 83.4 million. Tubatsi Fitahomo, 240 million. Lipela Nkumpi, 155 million. This gives us 1.57 million billion rand. Now, before I proceed, I just want to take you a little bit back on this bit of history here. And the history we have on the Limpopo side is that there were 10 municipalities that invested funds in the VBS, namely Polokwane, Makudu Tamaha, Elias Mtswaledi Makado, Ephraim Mukhale, Collins Chabane, Vembe District, Greater Kiani, Lipela Nkumbi, and Fitahomo Tubatsi. Out of the 10 above mentioned municipalities, investments for the three municipalities, which is Polokwane, Makudu Tamaha, and Elias Mtswaledi, matured, and then matured, and both investment and interest were paid to the municipalities. The remaining seven still have their funds invested in VBS, and that's Ephraim Mukhale, Lepele Nkumbi, Fitahomo, Makado, Greater Kiani, and Collins Chabane. To deal with the potential financial implications due to inability to get investment, then the province had called in mayor's forums to discuss the issue around the 15th and to discuss the issues where VBS investments were affected. They had to look at some particular ways of how to deal with the projects that had to, that were affected. I'll come back to that part on that particular report. If you go to the next page, we get to page 7. Gives you a kind of chart there that gives us which ones are immediately facing challenges. Here, where it is felt that they will not be able to comply with various aspects of their financial performance, those that have indicated that they have challenges to perform financial and service delivery obligations will be the West Rand, Madibeng, Mahikeng, Dr. Ruth Mumpati District, and Fitahomo Tubatsi. The ones that have challenges to comply with payments of monthly fixed operational expenditure would then those be West Rand, Mahikeng, Dr. Ruth Sokomotsi Mumpati District, and Fitahomo Tubatsi. Now, this basically means that there's a level of affectation that they have. That means that on a day-to-day basis, they will be running into specific difficulties. Then the projects should be implemented within the planned time frame. Again, the same municipalities, largely West Rand, Moretele in this case, as well as Dr. Ruth Mumpati and Fitahomo Tubatsi as the next one. And then where they've had to delay or suspend projects, it's West Rand, it's Dr. Ruth Mumpati, it's Greater Kiani, and again, Fitahomo Tubatsi is in. Where they've got difficulties in paying for the 30 days to pay their creditors within 30 days, the number is higher. West Rand, Mirafong, Moretele, Madibeng, Mahikeng, Dr. Mumpati, and then Fitahomo Dubatse again. Then the ones that had disclosed their creditors in terms of Section 71 reports, two are affected as being non-compliant, mainly Mahikeng and then Fitahomo Dubatse. Then we try to go into some of the specific municipalities. In the West Rand, the municipality invested the conditional grant, which was the Neighborhood Development Grant, Partnership Grant and Disaster Mining Town Allocation. The municipality obtained external legal opinion that the investment was compliant with MFMA and Municipal Investment Regulations. The financial recovery plan was not developed as per the resolution with the minister at the time when we needed. We met with them and we'd asked them to develop a financial recovery plan. Now, this one said to us that the legal opinion, they're pretty firm and adamant about it. I have not seen this legal opinion, and I'm still doubting whether it does exist, but even if it did exist, our point was that there's only one authority in the interpretation of finance regulations of government, and that's National Treasury. So any other expert view is unacceptable. And so we made that point clear. Now, this municipality has come back to us a few times raising the issues. At the moment, they've actually asked to be granted an advance in the equitable share. They wrote to us, and this is what happened last week. And their argument is that there was a disaster in the area where they actually advanced money to the local municipality, I think Merafong. And when that matter was settled, the resettlement, the payment, the refund for the disaster problem was actually sent to the Merafong municipality, which again decided to keep the money and not replace anything from the district municipality. So they have then declared those various projects as being suspended: public rem upgrade phase 2, Pekastal water tower, petrol water waste treatment works, Droche, Uvel, bulk water supply, underground water sanitation master plan, construction roads and maintenance, Zanzal electricity. They were supposed to be covered by those municipalities. Those now have to be suspended. Merafong, the reason for not paying creditors within 30 days is a result of financial challenges, they say, from 2014 and the negative outcomes of the mine properties. Now, there's a problem there with the rates in the area, and so the properties have kind of devalued, and so they feel that that was the cause of their major problem. Apparently the matter has gone to court, and that matter has not been finalized. They owe Eskom 155 million over 30 days due, and due to lack of response by municipality regarding the plans to settle the debt, Eskom has escalated this matter to provincial treasury. Then the municipality that invested conditional grants, which is municipal infrastructure grants, water services infrastructure grant, housing settlement grant, and the list of other affected projects has not been provided yet. They haven't shown us a financial recovery plan as we had indicated in my meeting with them. So when we ask them how far they are, there's not much progress at the moment. Then coming to the Northwest, here you have late implementation in Moretele, late implementation of a program or projects. They say it was due to late appointment of service providers, and they think that it's an administrative delay. A portion of invested funds relate to water services and infrastructure grants. We have attached at least somewhere. The municipality has developed a municipal recovery plan. Now, in this one, um, We have I think just to indicate that in all the provinces, we've set up teams to do forensic work. So in Limpopo, they've got Grant Thornton that is doing the forensic audit. In Northwest, it's Sekela Klabiso. And then in Gauteng province, it's Deloitte. So that is going on all of them. So in Morotele municipality, they've also initiated their own internal investigations, and they've also put the matter with their MPACs for this whole process to go on since September. The investigation currently is underway, and they think that all these reports we should get by sometime in end of October. And so we expect more information, and that report will be taken to council and will take the issues from there. In Madibeng, the municipality experienced the challenge of service delivery due to aging infrastructure. They've raised that as their major issue. Creditors were not paid in 30 days and the 185 million due over 30 days due to cash flow challenges and low collection rates. The municipality owes Eskom 21 million over 30 days. There's also some of the accounts are being disputed. And they also, in Madibeng, initiated internal investigations. The date of their commencement of those investigations around 27th of June 2018. Disciplinary processes have been instituted against three affected officials, and the total number of councillors currently facing disciplinary charges is one councillor. The Office of the Speaker has already initiated the process of convening the Rules of Order and Ethics Committee to institute disciplinary processes against the alleged MMC, the MMC of Finance. Then a criminal case has been opened with Brits SEPs office and registered under the case number 47/9/2018. Against all implicated individuals for financial misconduct. So they were hoping to have completed this matter by end of August. We will await a further update from Madibeng. Giani, now we're moving, I think we got them a little bit mixed up, but let me just move to Dr. Ruth Mompati District. The municipality experiences challenges in performing financial and service delivery obligations. The municipality invested conditional grants, the tranche of the bulk regional bulk infrastructure grant for current financial year was not received, and a portion of equitable share was used to pay service providers. Municipality pays monthly fixed operational expenditure with the exception of the Sedibeng Water Board, and the Water Board invoice of the municipality is at 20 million monthly as per service level agreement. The repayment amount is not affordable and not sustainable. Creditors are not paid within 30 days. As a result, National Treasury is withholding the funds. Financial recovery has not been developed. If I can just add a little on that, Ruth Mompati. They also initiated their internal investigations as we had agreed, and this commenced on the 29th of June, and the status of the investigation, that the report on internal investigation was concluded by MPACT and tabled to council, and the following are the findings. Now, this is an internal report that they are doing as a municipality based on the fact that the issue, they were supposed to act on it. However, that does not exclude them from the forensic audit process. The municipal banking and investment policy, they said, is not consistent with the investment regulation. The MPACT discovered that there was therefore financial misconduct, and the officials, they believe that they should have consulted with the mayor before committing the investment. So the council resolved as follows: to review the adopted municipal banking and investment policy, which they had, so that is consistent with the Municipal Finance Management Act and the investment regulations, And that the council is going to consider a preliminary investigation report from the risk management unit, which is internal. The council implements the minister's directive to the fullest, which is the investigation that we said they must do, the disclosures that we said they needed to do. So the council is also to take the matter to disciplinary board for further investigation and report to be tabled in November, and the date of completion will be sometime towards the end of November. That's Ruth Mumpati, and so we move to the same Ruth Mumpati. They give us a list, which you look in slide 13, it gives you the list of projects that have been suspended. Daung Naledi Bulk Water Supply Phase 2, Daung Naledi Bulk Water Supply Phase 2B, 2A and 2B, 2C, and 2D, and then 2E, 1, and down a little bulk water. And these are in different municipalities. Here you've got Greater Mamusa Bulk Water Supply. Then you have also the same issues of bulk water, raw water abstraction, etc., but they're all tabled there. Then you've got also some in Kakhsano Molopo. Here you've got bulk water from Tsioho to Bonabona, and then bulk water from Tlaping to Exedale. They have motivated for the release of the current financial year grant. They're waiting for the response, and there's not been a response at the moment from the Department of Water and Sanitation. The next one is Maikeng. Maikeng, Maikeng, the challenge here is in relation to non-payment of sediment water board and services provided in rural areas whereby local municipalities not compensated by the district. It's on the issues of repossession of yellow and white fleet. The reasons for repossession of the fleet was not provided. The expiry of the new GX contracts on refuse removal on sporadic industrial action by workers. They've not given us all the reasons. And then the issues of the creditors' non-payment for over 30 days. Now, Mahikeng, we've also further got the report that the total number of municipal officials facing disciplinary charges is one, that is the municipal manager. The council took a resolution for the suspension of such an official, and resolve further to institute a forensic investigation in this regard, and also open a case of fraud against the perpetrators. To date, they appointed Scholes Law Firm to conduct investigation with the results of VPS. So this would be a duplicate investigation from what I can see. But that's a decision of the municipality. I may just pause here to say that the municipal manager of Maikeng was quite an interesting story, because COCTA made a mistake at some point and transferred twice the amount that should have been transferred. So it was supposed to be 60 million, then COCTA erroneously transferred 120 million to to Maikeng. Now, then he was given a call to say, oh, a mistake has been committed, please send back the 60 million. Then he said, no, you must do that in writing. And then the letter was sent in writing. So when they appeared before me and I asked what was going on, he argued that the letter took too long to get to him. And we had an argument about whether, in fact, he was correct or not. We left that argument, and we moved on to say, but in that case, so how did you end up deciding to go to VBS? He says, well, this money was costing us a lot to keep in the bank, and so he thought he must actually go and invest it somewhere. But a simpler issue would have been to say to the owners of the money that your money is costing us, so you're going to pay so much. And then you would have needed their permission to take this money to another bank. And he said, well, you know, Quokka made a mistake, so he can't be blamed alone. So we then said, no, but MEC, go back and get this matter acted upon. That's how you get to this point. So effectively, that's what has happened. I'm also trying to find out something which I have picked up, but we haven't got it formally, that there seems to be a case where Mahikeng Municipality has applied to Polokwane High Court to unwind VBS Bank. Now, I'm not sure what's happening there, so we still need to go into checking what actually is going on there. But that is how far we can take the issue of Mahikeng. Then we move to the Limpopo Bembe. We have given a bit of background on those municipalities in Limpopo. In the case of Bembe, that municipality has deposited, as we've said, 316 million rand with VBS. The municipality reflected that it's able to meet its financial obligations and pay creditors within 30 days. Through observation of external financial reports, records, the municipality owed water and sanitation 691 million rand for water services, the last payment being 2017 December. In addition, creditors' age analysis reflect amount owed over 30 days. The municipality committed to restructure its budget during its ordinary adjustment by a period around January-February 2018, and recovery plan is not tabled yet to council. Should the municipality fail to implement a recovery plan, considering huge debt with the Department of Water and Sanitation, we believe it will experience some challenges with recovery. I think members will be aware that that is the municipality where there is already a comment on the report, the Mudao report, that suggests that the mayor may have had some knowledge of what was going on, although most of the mayors had actually indicated to us that they were unaware of what was going on there. Then the next one is the Fitakomo Tubatse municipality. This one, as you have seen on the bar chart, the municipality is experiencing financial challenges to meet financial and service delivery obligations. Some programs and projects were rolled over to the second and third quarter due to financial challenges, and the list of those is attached somewhere, is not attached this time. We're still waiting for that. Creditors disclosed in the Section 71 reports are incomplete due to the fact that their system allows creditors to be paid on the financial system but not on the actual Standard Bank system. So we're still having a bit of problems with the records there. The municipality said they've developed a financial recovery plan, as it were. So that is the situation. Now, in relation to the Tubatse one, I think some of us might have seen that there's already protests outside the offices of the municipality with people raising the issues, demanding the dismissal of the municipal manager, and I've also heard that some reports that the municipal, that the mayor actually said on TV that they are already bankrupt. So I think we're trying to get a lot more information to, you know, verify exactly what the situation is, because I think that one is already getting a challenge. In fact, from my understanding, they were already having difficulties in paying salaries. So just to see the municipalities that invested conditional grants is what you have on page 17, on the slide 17. Those are all conditional grants that were specific for infrastructure that have been put up there. This table that you have seen illustrate municipalities that confirm to have invested conditional grants. One of the criteria for approving applications for rollover is that the unspent conditional grants should be cash-backed. National Treasury is at the stage now of advanced stage of releasing the outcomes of the applications for rollovers. So should the applications for rollovers be disapproved, the municipality will be expected to return the money to the National Revenue Fund or National Treasury. Or National Treasury will set off against the equitable share in accordance with Section 22, subsection 4 of the Divisions of Revenue Act. The disapproval of the applications for rollovers implies that the municipalities will experience significant financial challenges. Effectively, what this is saying to us is that the municipalities must say to Treasury, we haven't used so much money, so we need to use it next year. If the Treasury has to approve, they must then say, here is the money. And the chances are they won't be able to show the money because that money is no longer available. At the same time, if it can be approved that they must get the money rolled over, that will be assuming that the money is in their bank and so they'll have to use that money. But if the money is not there, even if the rollover will not offer them anything. So effectively, we are likely to begin to feel the crunch on a number of these municipalities. So there are seven of these municipalities in Limpopo that confirmed that they use their own revenue funds to invest in VBS, but part of the forensic investigation is supposed to help us to confirm where exactly the source of the funds were. There are potential litigations for non-payment of service providers and inability to honor legal or contractual obligations, and these we're worried about because then obviously a number of service providers might just be taking the municipalities to court. Non-payment of monthly fixed operational expenditures such as salaries might also be affected, as already I've indicated in Fitakomo, Tubati. And then fruitless and wasteful expenditure due to interest on overdue accounts, and then community protests have already started in some of the areas. And you recall that we did say all the mayors must go out and communicate to the communities to indicate what has happened and therefore make it clear how they hope to deal with that issue at that level. Some of the measures that we have put in place, we had a meeting with the affected municipalities on 19th of June. Amongst the resolutions taken was budget restructuring and development of recovery plans to ensure that municipalities remain financially stable and continue to provide sustainable service delivery. National Treasury and DCOC and the AG's office held a meeting on the 3rd of July to look at the impact, and subsequently National Treasury issued a communique to the affected municipality which is for consistent approach in restructuring the budgets, disclosure of potential investment loss in the annual financial statements and consequence management. So this has already been done. The municipalities are also required to submit monthly budget statement to the mayor and relevant treasury in accordance to MFMA Section 71. That's already in place. The CFOs and municipal managers are required to sign quarterly Section 71 verification reports for the accuracy and completeness of information prior to publication of by National Treasury. So this consists of in-year financial results and financial performance information relating to municipal conditional grants. That is a requirement that they've got to work on. Treasury verifies consistent reporting of Section 71, so again, Treasury is monitoring that aspect. The affected provincial departments instituted forensic investigation in accordance with Section 106 of the Municipal Systems Act, and I did give the names at the beginning. Limpopo Province have already had the introductory meetings to explain to them the processes, and the investigation started. Northwest the same, and Gauteng, we're waiting for the timelines in the Gauteng municipalities. So our conclusion then is to improve financial sustainability, Municipalities need to implement recovery plans as well as strategies to strengthen governance structures. The risks associated with the inadequate implementation of recovery plans and strategies need to be monitored by treasuries and managed in order to realize the expected outcomes. There will be no bailout to the municipalities. However, support is provided to the affected municipalities to strengthen their internal controls, reporting, as well as revenue raising measures and capacity building and service delivery. Then we're focusing on back to basics program to address municipal performance failures to assist affected municipalities to provide quality of sustainable service delivery. And this takes us back to the whole recovery plan that we had raised around dealing with issues of governance and the various municipalities. And those processes are going on where we're supporting various municipalities on the issues of governance, also on the issues of financial recovery. As a matter of interest, when we went earlier in the visit to Limpopo, we found that about 15 of the 27 municipalities seem to have had what we could call unfunded budgets, that we had to get them back to start from scratch and redo them. And we've been watching out on this to ensure that all of these don't become a factor, because each time the Auditor General reports, there was an increasing number of municipalities where the budgets were not cash-baked and therefore not credible. So all of these we've actually instituted to quite an extent. I think where we are, we're at a point where we want to get the reports from the forensic auditing. Those reports will then help us to be able to pinpoint individuals on whom we can lay a degree of culpability for purposes of both disciplinary proceedings as well as criminal charges beyond what the municipalities have already done. I think that the report that has come from the Reserve Bank has indicated the very crude abuse of finances which were destined for poor communities, and in this case it creates an impression that not only were we dealing with a situation where the investments were taken to a mutual bank which was illegal and procedural, but we also have a second issue that inside that institution was a systematic, structured, fraudulent process that was siphoning money out of the municipalities, out of the bank. And therefore, we have briefed senior counsel to consider combining various provincial coctors as well as municipalities to launch a lawsuit on this matter, so that we must chase and try and recover the money. It's still early days to be able to report on that aspect, but that is what we intend to do. And we realize that the report that comes from the Reserve Bank on its own, it's not helpful for us to deal with the issues from the side of the municipalities. Hence, we actually believe it was correct for us to institute a forensic audit process, because it will then help us to uncover the genesis of the decision that led to the money being taken to the municipal, to the VPS. We have noted a number of things that have come from this report, in particular that more municipal managers or CFOs or councillors, mayors, MNCs could have been aware or involved. But we believe that this report on our side is going to be a lot more specific in being able to find out what actually happened and who is responsible, and taking from there then to institute the necessary criminal proceedings that we need to do. And at the same time, we also hope that it will be clear where internal disciplinary processes have to be undertaken, as I think you have seen a few of those municipalities. In fact, I didn't mention that in some of the municipalities there's been action. In the case of Giani, I did say that they suspended the CFO and the Director of Technical Services in July, and this was reported to me, but also that the special counsel resolved on the basis of these findings of disciplinary hearing to terminate the services of the CFO on the basis of the VBS issue. And then in Bembe District, the council resolved to place the municipal manager and CFO on precautionary suspension pending the allegations of misconduct on their in their situation. And so that, I think, as I've indicated, gives us a few of the municipalities that have already started taking actions, and we hope that with time more and more of these will be taken. But I think we're moving past the point of exclamations about the extent of fraud. We're getting to a point where we need to both act on individuals, but also to start pursuing mechanisms to recover this money. In my own mind, I think from a layman's point of view, I think 1.57 billion rand, and of course in this case there are other funeral associations, funeral groups, some small co-ops, ordinary people who were, you know, clients of this bank who would have got their money all wasted. I think it probably comes to just beyond 2 billion. And so it's grossly unfair, and therefore I think we need to find ways to see how we can help those ordinary people as well, not to lose everything entirely. And I therefore think that these funds must be pursued. I think it's not possible for 1.57 billion rand or even 2 billion to just disappear completely untraceable. I think it should be found in some accounts, in some investment, in some assets, in some property, in some, you know, some way there should be some money that should we should be able to. So I believe that we need to get onto the stage once we get all the information to aggressively pursue lawsuits that will actually get as much of this money recovered as possible. Government otherwise will have a hole of 1.57 billion rand that will need to be funded somehow, or the community will have to forego the services. And I think that we need to really go aggressively to go and recover this money. If I can just hold it at that, Chairperson, this is work in progress. We don't expect to answer all your questions because we think that too many questions, even our own questions, haven't been answered properly in this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for the presentation. It's very helpful. We'll invite honorable members to pose questions, to engage with the report. Honorable Mteto, Honorable Gwezi, Honorable Shabalala, Professor, did you hear the report?
I have an interesting question that you laugh.
Okay. Let me note you, Professor.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Minister, for the report. Minister, I am concerned that when National Treasury submitted their report to this portfolio committee some months ago about VBS, one of the municipalities that was mentioned as having invested in VBS was Dr. J.S. Maroka Municipality in Limpopo, who had invested an amount of 10.118 million rand. It's not included in your list. Can you explain why? Then, Minister, I am concerned that you seem to be focusing on the municipal finance, the municipal investment regulations as the basis for the illegality on the part of the municipalities. However, Section 7.3b of the MFMA is explicit that banks, that municipalities must deposit their funds in an account with a bank registered in terms of the Banks Act. Now, I know that the regulations say the same thing, and some of these municipalities are challenging the legality of those regulations and the applicability of those regulations. However, the national legislation, the MFMA, is very clear that they may not deposit money in a mutual bank. Minister, I am concerned about the number of municipalities that are reflected here that have not got or have not implemented financial recovery plans. Section 1391 of the MFMA places an onus on the provincial executive to impose financial recovery plans, and Section 146 of the same Act specifies what must happen if they don't implement it. And that's borne out by Section 1395 of the Constitution, where it says that if a municipality does not or cannot implement a financial recovery plan, you, Minister, must dissolve it. Now, Minister, my question to you is this. Why have these municipalities not been dissolved? And why have the municipal councils not been dissolved? Let me make sure that I'm 100% technically correct. It's not the municipality that gets dissolved. It's the council. But why have you not done so? Why have you not imposed those financial recovery plans? Every single one of these municipalities is on your list of 87 distressed or dysfunctional municipalities. Every single one of them has got challenges from a service delivery perspective and a financial perspective. They're not able to pay their Eskom bills. They're not able to meet their creditors' accounts. So why are they allowed to carry on operating with impunity, to challenge the legality of these issues? Why are they allowed to incur further costs? Why are people like Florence Radulana allowed to go on national television and say that she has no knowledge of these regulations and legislation? She's the mayor of that municipality. She's ultimately responsible for the finances in that municipality. Her and the municipal manager. Which brings me to another point, Minister. In every single municipality, the municipal manager is the accounting officer. They are responsible for the finances of that municipality. If they acted in contravention of the MFMA and the investment regulations, and in many instances their own investment bylaws, why are they still permitted to sit in their cushy positions earning a fat salary? Why have you, Minister, not intervened in those municipalities? How many of these municipalities, Minister, are under administration? And what is the current status of those administrations? I noticed that you said that West Rand District Municipality, for example, was disputing the legality of the regulations and actually disputing the legality, or let me put it another way, that by depositing money in VBS, they were acting legally, that they were acting, they were compliant with the MFMA and they were compliant with the regulations. Mr. Romeo Mahori, who is the municipal manager of West Rand District Municipality, is known to have very close links to VBS. Minister, why is he still in his position? Why has he not been suspended? These are the questions that the residents of these municipalities, some of the poorest and worst run municipalities in the country, want to know. We've seen lists up here that you've put up of the service delivery challenges that these municipalities are facing because of their investments. And the residents there are saying, why are we not getting our services? Why are you allowing these people who have been elected to or appointed to serve us? Why are you allowing them to get away with this? Minister, these are the questions that we need to answer.
Let's take Honorable Mthethwa. We will allow the Minister to answer after Mthethwa, because I think Honorable Nyathe Mhlophe went on and on for many questions. And then we'll allow to answer, and then we come back again. Time is on our side. Honorable Mthethwa.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to start, Minister, with Mahikeng Municipality. Mahikeng, if you look at the first page, page 7, that slide that explains the financial and service delivery performance of municipality. Mahikeng, Chair, is one of the municipalities that has done very bad in terms of the financial service delivery and also for meeting the payment, the fixed operational expenditure. But also you mentioned the issue that in Mahikeng there was money that was deposited there by mistake. Is the money still there, or it was part of the money that was deposited in the VBS? Actually, I don't also understand the logic of them carrying cost for that money instead of saying them they were getting interest for the money that has been deposited to them. What logic are they using to advance that argument? And secondly, Chair, I think now it's high time that all these municipality managers that have been appearing, especially on your list, their qualification must be scrutinized and be publicized so that we knew who are these people. Are they really qualified people to run this such municipality? We will want Minister just to finish us with details of these managers, a list of them, so that we can see their qualification. If need so, they need to be reported to their boards as well. And you look at Vembe District. In your first slide, page 7, it looks like it's a municipality. It's one of the municipalities that has deposited a lot of money into this bank. And secondly, there is a contradiction, because if you look at their financial performance services and delivery, it looks like they were fine. But if you go deep down to the page where you were analyzing each municipality, why are they in the reds, you will find that they are one of those that are failing to pay within 30 days. They owe water services. But here, everything to them, it looks like it is green. They have been doing very well in your first slide. Maybe there is some contradiction, because it was supposed to be indicated in your first slide under creditors' disclosure and also for creditors that are not paid within the specified date, since there are challenges that we are seeing for Vembe at a later stage when you go down and analyze it. And I would also be interested to see the qualification of this guy of the Vembe municipality. Thanks, Chair.
Well, I think we should invite the minister and the department just to answer, because there are too many questions now. And also, Minister, it would be important also to assist us to understand the symphony, because it seems a parallel structure was set up. Some call Vele, but it's Bele.
Okay.
The Bele one. How do we deal with this situation? Because it's very clear that money comes and money goes. And then it seems the scheme was a well-designed scheme just to rob the poor in the country. Because not only Vembe area that is deposited money, but some also Mahikeng and other areas. And I think that will also assist us, because the share of the board is part of the Bele, part of this. It's very clear that there's a bigger problem that we are dealing with. Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start with the last question from... Let me start with the question from Honorable Mthethwa. The question that Honorable Mthethwa is raising about the charts that we have shown that indicates which municipalities are having difficulties, which ones are not, effectively, it's a self-disclosure situation, where people have indicated this is where they're having problems and so on. That's the reason why, even in the first meeting we had, we asked who took the decision. It was a council decision. Did the mayor know about it? Did the MM consult about it? And a large number of them actually said no, they didn't know. Clearly, we were not served with the truth of what happened. So we still believe that there may well be instances where the municipality might give us information and our own investigation might prove otherwise. That is why acting in haste is a bit tricky here, unless we've got a properly, scientifically researched report that tells us something that you can actually take and stand in court. So that is what we might need to first sort out with Vembe, Honorable Member. That we will need to confirm with you once we've gone through that report, then we know what happens, because it is true, 316 million is a huge amount, and that must show somewhere. Now, some of the mayors said the money was not immediately required. It was for outer years, that kind of thing, meaning that they could have used some of their reserves, etc. But it's only when you audit them, then you know that they're telling you the truth or not. And so we still believe that we have not come to the end of the conclusions on this matter. You've asked a question about the qualification of those managers. All right. In Gauteng, the chief financial officer has got an honors degree in Merafong. He's got an honors degree in accounting science and then another diploma. West Rand, they didn't give us that. We're still waiting for that information. Greater Kiani, BCom Accounting. These are CFOs. Makado, Honors Accounting Science. Collins Chabane, BCom Accounting. Bembe District, BCom Accounting Honors. Lebele Nkumbi, BCom. Ephraim Mkhale, National Diploma in Cost Management. Elias Mswaledi, Bachelor Accounting. Fitahomo Tubatse, BCom Honors. And CA Honors Bachelor Accounting Science. Sorry, no, this BCom Honors. And CA. Polokwane is Honors Bachelor Accounting Science. Capricorn DM, Honors BCom Accounting. Makutu Tamaha, BCom Accounting. Moretele Municipality, BCom Engineering Mechanical. Then, yes. Then, we have got a few that are missing in Madibeng and Mahikeng. Then, Ruth Mumpati, BCom Honors and MBA, and then those Matibeng and Maikeng, at the time they were vacant. So that's what we've got. Let's have the municipal manager. That was my first question when we asked this. Now, Merafong, this looks like MSc. We'll have to just check what exactly this one is. West Rand is Masters of Business Administration. Greater Kiani, BTech Engineering. These are municipal managers. Makado, Masters of Business Administration. Collins Chabane, BUris degree. Vembe, Honors in Bachelor Administration. Lepele Nkumbi, BCom and postgraduate in accountancy. Ephraim Mkhale, BED Honors. Elias Mtswaledi, Master Public Administration. Fitahomo Tubatse, at the time it was vacant. Polokwane, Bachelor of Environmental Science. Capricorn, Master's Degree in Town and Regional Planning. Makutu Tamaha was vacant. Morodele was a Bachelor of Education. Madibeng, BCom Honors in Economics. Maikeng was Master's in Public Administration. That's the one you're interested in. Mm-hmm. Then Ruth Mumpati, BCom Accounting, and Jess Moroka was vacant. Then the issue on Maikeng, effectively what this gentlemen, look, let me say that his behavior was completely unbecoming, and I made it very clear. So his conduct was completely unbecoming, and on that basis, we then said the matter needed to be taken forward. His explanation of what was the problem in returning the money was completely incredible. You cannot argue the way he did. So we left that issue and we said the MEC must go and make sure that the municipality deals with him, and that has been done. However, what actually happened is that 60 million was supposed to be returned to COCTA. That 60 million was taken to be invested with VBS, then Treasury said, when COCTA reported to Treasury, and then Treasury said, okay, because you've taken the 60 million, then we're going to reduce your equitable share by the same amount, and then you sort your issues out. And that's what happened. Then we then said, okay, now he must explain how their money, which was the municipal 60 million, was actually deposited to VBS. That's when we said this must fall into the entire investigation on that matter. So let me move on to the questions that were raised by the Honorable Melham. Well, Honorable Melham, you know, me and you must accept that there's a lot wrong here. We must also agree that we've done quite a bit. We must also agree that there's a lot to be done. We must agree that we cannot answer all these issues directly because a lot of investigations are being done. Okay? But when they ask you questions about what is the minister doing, then you have the report of what is it that's been done. Some of the things that you are raising now, it's an interesting thing because on the other day in the debate, you quoted for me Section 151 of the Constitution. Now, this Constitution says, Section 151, Subshell Section 3 says, a municipality has a right to govern on its own initiative the local government affairs of its community subject to national and provincial legislation as provided in the Constitution. Okay? 4 says, the national or provincial government may not compromise or impede a municipality's ability or right to exercise its powers or perform its functions. In this case, what we have done, we have said to the municipalities, you will act on those that are found to be culpable. You will do your own investigations, but on top, on behalf of national and provincial government, you shall have a forensic audit which you must cooperate with. That process is underway. Because it's underway, we need to respect that there may not be a situation where we can actually force anybody out of the position unless that municipality does that. In this case, they've suspended a number of officials, not the national minister, not the provincial. That municipality has to do it, and they must take responsibility as well, because that's their responsibility. You've raised a specific question about Jess Moroka. Yes, indeed, we have not mentioned Jess Moroka because Jess Moroka in Mpumalanga, actually deposited the money, and withdrew the money before this municipality was put, or before the bank was put onto curatorship. So it didn't fall directly on these particular issues. The report we're giving was about Limpopo because we had this comprehensive report from Limpopo. But we were more interested on those that have actually lost the money, even though we're interested in knowing who else did put the money into this thing. It is of interest to us the fact that there was a warning from Treasury. Apart from the warning, the regulations prevent the municipalities from doing so. I don't have an issue of splitting hairs here. What they did was illegal, full stop. We can quote one law, we can quote two laws, we can quote three laws. It's neither here nor there. The point is that this is the one we're relying on to deal with this issue. The others we can deal with. There's no problem. Then the number of municipalities, we have said to them they must give us recovery plans. We gave them that instruction. Now, once they give us those reports, we go back to say, you haven't done this, let's do that. Now, the numbers of municipalities that we have to intervene in, I want to get our team to give me the list. Okay. You see, the numbers of municipalities that are under intervention is large. We were in a meeting here with SALGA and the NCOP, and they were raising the question to us, are you rushing too quickly to impose Section 139? Now, we need to always make sure. I've got an interesting one, Chairperson, of a municipality that is rejecting the intervention. They said, no, you are not going to. They're not going to intervene on us. And they are arguing, you know. Now, we need to be always convinced that this is the right time to intervene. So I can give you right now, Currently, 24 municipalities are under this section. They are not necessarily as part of the VPS. I'm just talking about the need to intervene. KZN and Northwest are the highest, with 21 and 19 municipalities subjected to the intervention of Section 139 respectively. In KZN, Emadlangeni, Edumbe, Koslangalbalele, Bofana, Donkengosazana Dlamini Zuma Local Municipality, and Umzinyathi District. Then we've got in Free State, Mafube, Masilonyana, Maluta Pofung in the Free State. Then we've got Walter Sisulu Local Municipality and Great Kai Municipality in the Eastern Cape. Mfuleni in Gauteng, Mudimolle Mkhopong, right. And in Limpopo, then we've got Kanaland in local municipality in the Western Cape, Inok Mkijima, and then eight new municipalities in Northwest. I've got that list. I must just get to the list for Northwest because five of those are in Section 139, and then the others are under the section of the MFMA. So there are interventions that were put in place on this, and as we monitor them and we get convinced that they actually require us to escalate the interventions, we'll do so. I think it's important to know that it's not really an intention of both national and provincial government to try and run the municipalities, but we have to intervene when we think that the situation is problematic. So in this case, this is what is happening. You raised the issue about the specific mayor. Now, in this case, she was in the meeting where I was, and we asked them if anybody knew about this, and of course, they didn't. They said they didn't know about it. They have now acted in that municipality, as I've indicated, to act on the MM and the CFO. There's already action there. So what else needs to be done, we will be able to get that when we see the report. We can then turn around when we've got a report that says, here there's involvement of so-and-so and so-and-so. Then we'll ask the question, why have you not acted on all of those? Right now, we've seen the report, and we need to actually take the investigations further so that we can indicate who needs to be acted upon. So if you want to know about the issue of Romeo Mahori, I don't know much about that, those connections with VPS, but I hope that it will come out clearly in this report. We had a debate with the MM of West Rand, and we said, that's why I said, I asked them to give us their legal opinion. And when they gave us, when they didn't give us a legal opinion, I've said to them, I'm even doubting whether it does exist. But they said, no, they have a different view. They've gone to their lawyers and all of that. That's when I've said that the interpretation of any legal expert on that legislation is irrelevant because the interpretation that works for us is the department that's a custodian of a legislation is the one that knows what was the spirit and the words of that particular legislation. But that's irrelevant for now. The point is that they've invested where they shouldn't have invested, even if their lawyer said that, well, that was fine. The point which we are raising here is that we need that forensic audit to give us where the decisions were taken, who by, and all of that. Then we can take the necessary action, as it were. Now, for the suspension of such an MM, that's up to the municipality. If the municipality hasn't done that, there's no problem. Until we get to the point where we're then saying, here's our forensic report, let's act on the basis of that. So I would not agree that there's not been actions there. Now, you were raising the issue about the recovery plan. Most of these, the municipalities that we're dealing with, we were with them in Limpopo about 2-3 months ago when we were to correct all their unfunded budgets. Then that was sorted out. Now the next issue that's come up is here, that their recovery plans are questionable. It doesn't take just one letter that say we haven't got it done. We have to send people there to go sit with them. Then we know that here you can only solve this by intervention. Then you know you can actually, you need to go and escalate much higher. I've got the whole report here, and I was hoping that the MEC was going to be able to join us because he's here for something else. Because, you know, I'm quite convinced that they've done what needs to be done on this matter. Let's allow the process to move on. It's tedious, it might creating might be creating a difficulty with our patients. We might be all upset and very unhappy about what has happened. But to rush and act on a situation where somebody can just take you to court and say, well, this was, you know, biased or there was no basis for it, it doesn't help. So I agree that we must be impatient with things that have gone wrong, and I agree that we must move on until we can discover what has happened. I can just tell you this, Honorable Mem, so far as this matter is concerned, by the time we're done with it, we'll have known exactly who did what. We will have made sure that this money is pursued right up to the end. And we can't accept to be accused of not acting here when in fact we can see where the process is going. We do understand why people are unhappy, why people are angry. People are going to be angry because how did this thing happen? Of course, now that it has happened, we must actually follow consequence management. So on that side, I agree. But in terms of what this department is supposed to do, we have actually followed as much as what needed to be done. I was sitting here talking to the governor of the Reserve Bank. They're going to try and move this thing. My point is, we must combine these two together. What they've got and what we will have out of this, that's the only time we'll be able to get the investigations to prove a proper case of fraud and collusion. That's the only time. Before then, it's very difficult when you see transactions there. You can say, yes, they look like they are not unjustifiable. But once you've created the whole link and you've seen the whole chain, that's when you can prove the proper case of fraud. That's why we instituted the forensic audit processes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ngwezi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members, officials. Thank you very much, Minister, for this report. And the legal part of my contributions has been covered by Honorable Mailhem. But I just have a few comments, Kawazela. The first comment is that in one meeting with the Portfolio Committee and Treasury indicated that they advised municipalities who were investing money on VBS Bank. But in spite of that, municipalities continued to do that. And based on that, to me, it means that we are on the right track if we continue to want to act on this matter so that we can find, you know, who did what and when. But also, Honorable Chairperson, I'm worried about the money that was overpaid by COCTA to a certain municipal debt, 60 million rand. What happened to the person who actually made this payment? I see how it ended, because it ended up in the VPS. Because we'll just think that a mistake occurred, when in fact this was a well-orchestrated plan. You know, to have this money overpaid, then that one can provide you with explanations, the MM, like he did. And I'm very sorry that you say even his behavior, you know, showed that if somebody who is very rich, you know, rich people are very arrogant, Minister. They don't know how poor people look like or should engage them. So that MM couldn't engage with you because maybe you are poor. So I think this was a well-orchestrated plan to have this 60 million. So, no, if somebody can refuse to be engaged by the minister and aggressively responds on the minister, it means the minister is poor and he is rich. So I know that conduct from some rich people. That's what money does to some rich people, especially money that are bought this way. It tends to give people the bad behavior. So I'm saying we need also to find out from COCTA really what happened. It has happened in one municipality, in KZN, that councillors were paid twice, you know. But then they were paid twice when another company had been paid twice again. So if it was supposed to be paid 200,000, then it was paid 400,000. So the municipal manager realizes that, no, hey, I've done this thing, I must just call it is a system problem, you know. Then he paid councillors twice, you know. So he was like trying to say, no, it was a problem with the system, you know, when in fact it was a well-planned, yes. So even here I'm suspecting that, and I will miss. But secondly, Honourable Minister, I think we must all agree that whatever monies can still be recovered, whether in the form of assets or in the form of cash, it must be recovered. I will not want to live in this country if the whole close to 2 billion rand really could, you know, get lost like just like that. You know, I think it will be an irresponsible government. So we need to recover. Even if it was 100 million, we must recover that 100 million. And we'll see what do we do with whatever is you know, is proven to be, you know, having lost on this process. And I see, Honourable Minister, there are the first six municipalities on page 7. Minister indicates that they can't pay their creditors within the period of 30 days. And this to me really requires urgent attention. Not because I sympathize with those who are supposed to be paid, but because it is an action that is against the law. So I think the department must do something about that. And also the municipalities, Honourable Minister, the three municipalities, the West Rand District, the Dr. Ruth Sekgomotsi Mopadi District, and Vetakgom Motobatsi, the local municipality. I'm wondering if Honourable Minister, because these ones also, I think, they require urgent attention. So I didn't get the explanation whether are they under administration or what. But if they are not, my recommendation will be that we put them under administration, Honourable Minister. The situation is really not pleasing at all. And I don't know, Honourable Members and Minister, because the Treasury regulations are adopted by members of parliament. So to have listened, Minister, to someone who says, no, we have a legal opinion on something that has already been approved, was actually an attack on the state. Whatever view is outside this is an attack on the state, because actually municipalities must practice what Treasury says. They have no right to argue against what the state is saying. So that legal opinion, Honourable Minister, I don't think you should entertain it. You should just enforce what Treasury rules say. And I see the loophole where it is, because we regard municipalities as the sphere of government. Mm. So they then forget to say that they can't interrogate the laws that we pass. The interrogation period is during when we are still, you know, in the process of like wanting to adopt or make those laws. But once we pass that law, interrogation must stop. We just need to enforce, and they just need to abide by it. Lastly, Honourable Minister, I need to congratulate or thank the municipalities that are already, taking steps against these matters. I see some have already initiated, you know, disciplinary on the MMC for finance. Honourable Minister, I don't know, because, you know, I doubt whether in case where monies have been invested without the consultation of council, how did that happen? Because investment, if you do investment, then council must approve that. So I think we need to get also clarity on whether before the investment was done, was council given the authority or to actually approve that investment? Because then the MMC for finance wouldn't have been, and I think that's the mayor, you know, wouldn't have been, oh, it's not the mayor, yeah, wouldn't have been part of, you know. So, yeah, because I know that council must approve. Then officials and departments must recommend, council must take a decision and all that. Thank you very much. All right, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Let me first thank the Minister for the presentation of this report. And to me, it's a job well done. Thank you very much, Minister, in terms of making sure that we receive this information. I think one thing that needs to be done is the follow-up in terms of the issues where the municipalities, affected municipalities, are saying they have their recovery plans. Because we also need to know what are those recovery plans. In the first instance, they should not have invested the grant, because the conditional grant, it's the money that it's specific. What are you being given this grant for, and what you supposed to be doing about it? And the question is, how could it have been invested in the first place, because it has never been the surplus from their own collections? So those are some of the things, but I'm glad that the minister is saying there will be a forensic audit that will give us details in terms of who has done what and how. Because I also don't believe that some leadership of the municipalities, they did not know the investment, because the procedure is that the recommendation, of course, comes to council and the council take decisions. And then whether you go and invest or not. So to me, some of the things are not really true, but you can't just say they are not true without having the factual information in terms of what has happened. So to me, I would like to say thank you very much, Minister, and if you continue doing this work, we are really pleased, because the poor that are suffering right now, because this VBS bank, it's also affecting those Stokvel mamas that have been saving with the bank, and of which I believe that maybe as the government we need to look into that and see how then those affected poor people can be rescued in this matter. But I believe that there is definitely something that we can look at and deliberate on it, although I'm not sure where are we going to find the money to make sure that these people get their monies, because they save the little that they have and then it's gone all of a sudden because of the greedy people who are taking monies that are not theirs. So we definitely have to deal with these municipalities to recover this money. Thanks.
Honorable Kubisa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Minister, honorable officials that are present, honorable members, thank you very much. Chairperson, let's first and foremost, my colleagues, I want to add my voice by thanking the Minister for the report, because this matter is in the public domain, and it seems to me the Minister has done some homework, and it seems there is work that is in progress. At least it keeps us abreast of what is happening at the moment. And certain issues have been mentioned here. One gets the impression that no one is sitting at his laurels insofar as this matter is concerned. A matter that is of critical importance and in the public domain. And the minister has alluded to the fact that it's a story that is in progress, a narrative that is in progress. Nevertheless, we are acting within the ambit of the law. And monies have got to be recovered. 2 billion that has been squandered here. Something has got to be done. And I believe that the law enforcement agencies at the moment are taking their course, and the department as well is working within the prescripts of the legislation to ensure that something is done. Of course, we've heard from the minister that there are people who are so adamant to give the progress report and say, no, you can't deal with us. That is a different story altogether, because at the end of the day, justice will have to ensue. Now, I have also heard the minister informing us about the qualifications of the CFOs. And I must say, Chairperson, for me, these people are highly learned. Because a person could have a BS degree, as some of the colleagues will agree, but that person might have an accounting as a major, and economics or business economics. A person might have a BUries. You know, in the 70s and the 80s, a person with BUries could do accounting as well. And so these people are well learned as far as they really, the qualifications are really what they are mentioning, they have these qualifications. Having said, Minister, I know that you are not working in silos. And I want to get from your side, especially what is it that you are doing in consultation with the other departments. For instance, Treasury, what is it, what is tangible that you are doing to ensure that at the end of the day, I know we cannot come to conclusion at the moment, as we have indicated that the law is taking its course. Somebody saying, you know, we got a legal opinion, external legal opinion. That begins to say that person was aware that what they were doing was wrong because he was working off tangent, outside the law. So the very fact that you went all out to try and solicit a public opinion, and it shows that something was going wayward. And these municipalities, some of them have not paid, their rates have not, their OSCOM service delivery is outstanding, they have not paid creditors. There is a lot that is wrong. I also remember, Minister, that when you began, you elicited some of these municipalities that were not doing well when you delivered your first paper. And now we are observing the same thing at the moment. Having said that, I believe that other departments will have to come in, Treasury, law enforcement agencies. I wanted to hear what is tangible that is happening at the moment so that we are always kept abreast, you know, as we go on. Because we are reading about this matter and we've heard that, I mean, there's an allegation that is flying around, Chairperson, that some of these municipalities were warned, but they ignored all that. But when it comes to issues of law, it's not about being warned. There is a Municipal Finance Management Act that you must act on. There are other precepts, as we understand that there is no area that is the legislature as local government, and we have got to act within the legal precepts. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That's my comment.
Chair, thanks very much.
I just want to join my colleagues to appreciate with the Minister to fast-track this issue which is in the public domain. Chair, the municipalities that you have reported in terms of 139, section 139, there are so many. I would suggest that rather than putting municipalities on section 139, let's look also section 134, section 154. What is it that we are doing to assist those municipalities? You know, taking into account that some of these municipalities, in terms of demographic, they are rural in its nature. No, when the municipality is in the rural in its nature, it does not collect any revenue, and so on and so forth. Now, I will really make the appeal to the minister. Just to look, you know, section 154, you know, as visas, you know, because the whole country, you know, all the municipalities will be put on on section 139. That is going to be a problem. But also on the issue of forensic report, I think we must be patient and wait for this report to come, because some of the issues that we are going to suggest maybe will be prematuring the investigation that is still going to be reported. But lastly, Minister,
I will also request a list for all the municipalities that have vacancies, that the minister maybe try to facilitate those processes. We fill those vacancies. Because we cannot expect a municipality to perform without a CFO, without an MM, so to say. Because that will cause a huge problem in the administration. Now we will come and complain, say, no, those municipalities, they must put in one section 139 without looking all those logistics. Yeah, thanks.
Chair, just two very quick ones. The minister said that there are 24 municipalities that are currently under administration, but he didn't actually answer my question as to which of these municipalities, of the ones on this list, are under administration. That was the one point. And my second point is, and this goes to what my honourable colleague has just mentioned, Section 1395 of the Constitution is very, very clear. I want to read it to you, Minister, because it seems like we forget what it says all the time. Section 1395 says, if a municipality, as a result of a crisis in its financial affairs, is in serious or persistent material breach of its obligations to provide basic services, or to meet its financial commitments, or admits that it is unable to meet its obligations or financial commitments, the relevant provincial executive must A, impose a financial recovery plan aimed at securing the municipality's ability to meet its obligations. So the obligation is firstly on the provincial executive to impose a financial recovery plan. Secondly, B, sorry, I've just moved my mouse here. The provincial executive must dissolve the municipal council if the municipality cannot or does not approve the legislative measures, including a budget or any revenue-raising measures necessary to give effect to the recovery plan. And C, the national executive must then step in the national executive must then step in if the provincial executive does not act. So that's section 1397, yes. Yeah. My point is this. Section 154 is all well and good to support, but there comes a point where you have to say it's not working. There comes a point where they are in persistent breach of their financial commitments and obligations, of their service delivery obligations. And that point is now. That point was reached 9 months ago when these funds were unable to be withdrawn. At that point, Minister, the provincial executives should have imposed those financial recovery plans. And if the provincial executive did not do so within a reasonable time, you should have done so, sir. It's no good now trying to support these municipalities. We need to address the issue, get them back on their feet as quickly as possible. And it's an obligation. It doesn't say may, it says must. So it's all nice, well and good to say, yeah, I'm doing this over here and I'm doing this over there, but Minister, we've got to take firm action. And this is why we've been calling for the Integrated Monitoring, Support and Interventions Bill since 2014 to come before this committee. Your department still has not tabled that bill. Why? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much. Let's start with those issues that Mr. Milham has raised. That bill on integrated planning and monitoring is a bill that's between the DPSA and COCTA. A portion of it was developed earlier. There's a whole lot of internal consultation that's going on right now. And part of it has actually been discussed through the Department of Performance, Monitoring and Evaluation. There's a whole lot of consultation that is going on insofar as that bill is concerned. And that's why it has not come forth to be discussed. Because a number of players have to, in the first instance, the question was, which of the department is the correct one to be handling it? Should it be COCTA? Should it be DPSA? Is it Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation? And that is where the discussion is. And as you know, the whole process right now in terms of the numbers of bills, there's a huge backlog. So it's not one of the bills that can easily jump the queue and get to that point. But the importance of the bill, we accept. The next issue that you raised in relation to the imposition of Section 139, excuse me, 1395, 1394, 1395. Okay, those are the correct sections on which to intervene. But I think you should need to look back. When we first got into dealing with these issues, we indicated the areas where there's problem of dysfunctionality. And we said we want to focus on those, and we categorize the areas of intervention. And what's been behind all of this has been the question that's been raised that you intervene with the drastic powers coming from the Constitution. You should have actually ensured that there's adequate Section 154 support, right? Now, between that time and now, that is what we're focusing on. And I tabled to this meeting here that our package of support is going to the issues of governance, which we've gone through here. In fact, some of you might have seen, in the past few weeks, we've actually been calling for professionals who can assist us to reinforce the department on those issues. Issues of financial recovery, where we've actually indicated we've got a memorandum of understanding between us as Treasury and COCTA to go into these municipalities to deal with these issues. We've already been dealing with a number of these issues, but what I think needs to be understood from where we sit is the build-up of when you want to intervene. You can't walk around and say you'll intervene literally everywhere. You must prove that here there's a failure, and here there's a failure. And in this case, if we take these issues from here and go to the next few weeks and we realize that on this one they are not able to deal with the issues of recovery plans, then if we call upon, we call for intervention, it is actually acceptable. In some of those, we believe that the interventions in terms of the general support is very, very important. Now, it's very nice when you talk about this. I'm busy with a debate with some municipalities about the fact that in the history of the intervention of Section 139(1)(b), we didn't dissolve municipalities. Instead, we appointed administrators. In fact, there's a huge question, a debate, about whether it is correct that we should be appointing administrators when it's only Section 139(1)(c) that is specific about the appointment of administrators. Now we're having that issue that we must deal with. That is not to say we can't intervene. It basically says you don't just go in when your case is not properly made and is not properly motivated. So we have to respect the fact that each of us as different layers of government must satisfy both the NCOP, the municipal and the municipality, as well as the court. If you have to go to court, that in fact you have done everything. As far as I'm concerned, we're going it with it the right way. Put as much support as possible and prove beyond reasonable doubt that actually they are failing, and then you take the next step. Because moving from 24 to a higher number of interventions is not really the ideal situation. And therefore, where we can actually get recovery before we intervene is even better, because the issue we're focusing is sustainability. That municipality must be sustainable. It must sort its own problems out. It must be given the capacity to be able to recover. It must be given capacity to be able to manage itself. And we can't just jump in and as though, you know, in municipality, it doesn't have its own right. But we must always prove to them that at this point, you have failed. And that is where that's where we are. Now, the interpretation of these municipalities is correct now, but if you go back to where we've been with these municipalities, we were at a point where we've asked them the question, you have put money into VPS. What is happening now? Are you having a problem now? And they said, no, we don't have a problem. Now, you can't deal with a situation where you've got a contest of the factual situation with the municipalities. You need to get to a point where you say, now you cannot answer this in any other way other than to confirm that you are no longer able to move forward, in which case we are now calling on the higher sphere of government to intervene. This is where we are. And in this case,
I said earlier that when the Treasury begins to raise the question of rollovers and call for cash back to the Treasury, you will then be able to show where there is a real crisis. That's when you're going to be able to deal with it and deal with it in that way effectively. That is why we are saying we will move on this, and there's no need to go into that section 1397. We are fully aware of our authority to intervene, but we have gone around to check whether the provincial governments are either unwilling or are able or inadequately addressing. We can't argue that it is true that you can bypass those provincial government. We have not proven that they are either failing, unwilling, or inadequately acting. We can't prove that. What we can prove is that they have embarked on the processes to give us the factual situation in a forensic audit process. That is the time at which we will then say, at this point, they are not able to move further. There are enough municipalities under administration. It taxes to manage those situations. There's a lot of support in terms of Section 154, which both the province and national is embarking upon. It's taxing. It's costly. And therefore, we need to make sure when we intervene, it is when there's no other way. And we don't fear intervention. We have told everyone, particularly those in the Northwest, that if they do not cooperate, that we don't even need to wait for the province. We can jump over the province in terms of the constitutional intervention. We're not there. We are aware of that authority. So it's not like we are not aware of this particular issue. Now, the question that you have raised, let me just have a look at the... I'll just say a few of those. Just for all that. Now, you see, five municipalities that are on Section 1391B in Northwest, I gave you a number of them, but amongst those that are already in this list, Mahikeng is there, and I think Naledi, Ngaram Mudirim Lema. So some of them are already on both, which is on the question of the problems of VBS and so on, but it's not the whole lot of them. As we go into the future, we should probably be able to deal with them. Some of those in the Northwest were put under Section 137 of the MFMA, where there's close monitoring. So there's a lot that is going on at that level. But in the next few months, as we get the reports and so on, the situation will change because there's going to obviously be a lot of other interventions. Now, the Honorable Dube has raised this issue of Section 154. That's our approach. We agree with that. That the provincial and national departments must support the municipalities as far as possible. Part of that support is basically a way to be able to prove the point of failure. As I've given you all the support, you are now failing still with all the support, then you escalate. That's the approach that you are taking. And of course, some of those municipalities are rural, and in this case, those basically rely on government intervention, as it were. I also think that it is true that we have to be patient. For example, the DA did lay charges in the Northwest against a number of municipal officials. That case can't proceed. It's largely a political case because you can't proceed. You will only proceed once you've got evidence that we will provide. You can only proceed once there's evidence that the Reserve Bank will provide. So, fine, it's nothing wrong with laying a charge like the DA did, but actually in terms of the substantive case, the DA didn't have any evidence. They would have needed that the police must investigate and so on. For the police to investigate, the starting point is get those forensic audits out first. Thereafter, you can deal with it. So you don't even need to lay a charge at the DA. We will actually do so when we have got the proper information. You just, there, this was basically, okay, I mean, I can't complain about it, but basically, DA was politicking.
Fine. It's politicking. It's not that it's bad. You know, in politics or law, you could charge anybody. Now, we are going to come with the substantive evidence of wrongdoing, targeting individuals, the perpetrators, and those who colluded. That's the time we're going to charge someone. Then you are not preempting the case. I'm not even sure any policeman knows where VBS is and where the perpetrator is, despite the fact that the DA would have put the case up. Now, that will create an impression that the COCTA or National Treasurer of government is actually trying to avoid charging people. It's government money, and there's no question about it. The point at the end of the day is we must all agree that what has happened is unacceptable and that criminal cases must be pursued, and for that reason, all of us must be on the same side. And we cannot in any way allow this money to disappear quietly. It's our people's money. It's our poor people who have been affected. And on that basis, we need to make sure that we pursue up to the last cent that we can get. And we must make sure that justice must prevail. And that has got nothing to do with where each of the parties might want to stand and grandstand and so on. It's got nothing to do with that. As far as we're concerned, it is correct that you must follow proper evidence to charge people, and we must make sure that they get charged. The issue again that Honorable Dune is raising is the vacancies, how people can, municipalities can perform without the critical post. Part of our intervention on issues of governance is to check exactly that. We don't only look for vacancies, we look for the qualifications, and I agree with Professor Kubis. It doesn't necessarily mean if someone has got a MPHB degree that he can't run a municipality. It depends what experience he's got. But it also doesn't mean that if you have got a good qualification, you cannot do fraud. This is what we're dealing with here. People knew what they were doing, and it's always the clever ones who have most understanding of the system that will turn to crooked. You don't get a sweep who will go and manipulate the financial management system. It is those who are at the point of dealing with it. So when we checked, we realized that most of those, in fact all of them, were really having proper, decent qualifications, and we can't question them. Because of that, we then put aside the question of inability to manage the system. We put aside the issue of ignorance of what they were doing. They know what they were doing, full stop. Then the other question that was raised by Professor Kubisa is about ESCOM. We will still need to come and present to this House the issue of ESCOM. At the moment, the reports are with cabinet processes. So as soon as we've got that done, we'll come through. What is true is that those who owe ESCOM owe others as well. And so it's a real problem of financial management in that municipality. The question that they were warned by National Treasury, and so why didn't they respond? Someone else asked this question. We asked them the same question, but Treasury issued a warning. Oh no, we didn't see it. That's it. Okay, if you didn't see the circular from Treasury, you should have at least read the regulations. Okay, I think maybe two municipalities, I was trying to check on our record which ones exactly, said no, they realized they were wrong. But the rest of the others, no, they didn't know. I'll give you the example because Honorable Ngwezi raised an issue which I think I'll give you an example of how this thing became very fluid as we're dealing with it. But your point, Professor, about that people... I don't have a big question about those qualifications. After all, from of late we do waivers, so we check the experience of the individual before we can let them continue with the work that they are doing. Then, Honorable Shabalala, your point, I think, is the same as the point that was raised by Honorable Milham, that we must follow up of the municipalities that still have got no recovery plans. I agree there. That we must make sure they ultimately get to that point. And that conditional grants can't be invested. You know, we must get factual details, exactly our point as well. Why did they take the money that was supposed to be for service delivery and they put it out there? And the most painful one of those is the one of Collins Chabane,
created 2017, and they received their money end of October, and in November they put the money up to VBS. Because why did they do that? They said, no, well, we were not ready. We're going to start our projects in the beginning of the new financial year, and so they thought they could keep the money. When they came back at end of February, the money was gone. Very painful situation, because it's the poorest of the municipalities, and all of us know how it was created and how there's a huge huge amount of poverty in that area. People need those services. So it's one of those kinds of things. And I agree with you that here we've got the case of the greedy robbing the poor. And that's exactly what you, how you can classify it. The Honorable Ngozi has raised a question about the question of MMC charge, not the mayor, and so on. Actually, you know, this one was a very crazy situation, because the story unfolded in a public meeting. We had gone there with Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma and a few others as an IMTT, and we just asked a simple question: did the council know about this? And the mayor stood up and said no. And then we said, who knew about it? Who is the MM? And the MM stood up. And he says, well, when that thing happened, I wasn't the MM. So he can't answer the question for the, on the behalf of the MM. However, he was the CFO. Now, so we then said, okay, you were the CFO, what happened? He says, no, I was CFO, but at that time, his appointment was pending and he was not allowed to sign because he was waiting for all the approvals and so on. So some junior officials actually authorized the thing. Then we said, somebody must have said so. Who? I don't have the answer. They went back because we said, guys, this story doesn't wash. Go back. That's why now you've got these kinds of situations. They know because they went into it. So I don't doubt when they decide that amongst themselves who must be, the charges be laid against, they know. They found out. We can't talk on their behalf. I can just say to you, we actually pulled the three, including the acting MM of the time. She came in. She was an HR manager. She came in and said, no, I was acting MM. I didn't know. This one was not an MM at the time. So because of this convoluted thing that you find in different municipalities, we realize that you can't just issue an instruction to say fire so-and-so, suspend so-and-so, and so on. That's why we said this issue requires forensic investigation. That's the benefit of getting the municipality to take responsibility and get a proper scientific investigation into this matter. Then, and I like your point about the municipalities can't interrogate laws that they're supposed to abide with. I agree with you. That's what exactly we told them. And we said, we don't worry about your legal opinion. We worry about the interpretation of Treasury. And that's the one we're going to follow. And that's why we closed the case. Then you also are raising an interesting issue. Those municipalities that you raise, that you say they need to be put under administration, it's the same point that Mr. Milham is raising. I'm saying, yes, we'll not argue. We're simply saying, allow us the process. We will see at the end whether we'll be able to take you through. We've got enough that we've put up. We must, on each and every one, motivate on a case-by-case to say this one. Whether we put them under administration last month or this month or next month, at the end of the day, what matters is whether we have adequate motivation for the decision and we've got adequate, you know, interventions to be able to get them to recover. We have a responsibility to see all of them having to recover. And so we're going to have to take that approach. And I agree that all the money must be recovered. You raise again the question of Cocta. What happened to the individual where the money was overpaid? It's like you were there when we actually had the fight inside the department. Because I asked the same question. But who did this? And then we went through the whole thing. Now, administratively, The department was able to explain to me that, well, the first point in this matter is that this thing would happen at one point or another, and when it has happened, this is the process that you follow. And the process they followed was to say the fellow reported that I've made a mistake, and on that basis, I'm starting the process to get the money retrieved and corrected. You will find that those things happen. Now, I'm sure your concern is about that municipal manager who did it to cover his tracks. In this case, those in the administration were not convinced that it was a deliberate a malicious act. So the next step they took was to say, give him a call, tell him he must return the money. It was when the MM decided to be, arrogant about it that it became an issue. And I also was very uncomfortable, probably just to say I was unhappy, because I said to the DG, why did you want to go to Treasury before you actually fix the two fellows? Then they said, well, the first thing they have to do is to report the matter to Treasury. And Treasury intervened, and when Treasury intervenes, Treasury said, firstly, if you guys have got 60 million more, we'll deduct it from your thing, sort it out, take it as a money that is yours, and sort it out. So we now are saying it's your money, you have invested it wrongly, take responsibility for it. Then it was the same question, I think, that was asked by Honorable Mteta on that particular matter. The only thing I can say about the response from the MM is that it was unacceptable, but in an open meeting like that, all you could do is to actually give instruction that they must go and deal with it properly. And I'm satisfied at this point that the MEC and the mayor went into that matter, and of course you have seen what has happened. So I'm fine with that. I think let's move on and make sure that people learn their lessons in that process. Honorable Chair, I think that's probably how far one can take the matter. I hope I've tried as much. But I think for the members to just bear with us, we can't answer everything until we get all the answers ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. And, Teto, I saw your hair. I think you are persuaded that you will do it next time. Okay, Honorable Mteto, what do you want to say?
Minister, thank you very much. I hope that even those that are assisting us in terms of investigating this matter, because these days you trust nobody. Hope it's not KPMG. I think the departments must declare in one way or other to say, look, who must do your work in terms of these finances? And the other question, Minister, of interest, I'm sitting here and thinking, these fellows that were doing all these things, is there any money that the Reserve Bank has confirmed has gone out of the country?
Thank you, Chair. Minister, you brought up two points that I wish to touch on. The first related to the laying of charges and the ability of the SAPS to investigate. Now, it's not for you to decide whether or not the SAPS has the capacity to investigate. What happened here was that municipal money disappeared, and there is a legal and a legislated criteria on municipalities not to invest their money in banks. We put it in the hands of the law enforcement authorities, the SAPS, to investigate and, where necessary, to hand over to the NPA for prosecution. It's not for you to tell me that I can't lay charges or that I'm politicking. That is my duty as a member of parliament. It is my constitutional obligation, and so that is what we did, because it did not seem to be any activity from your side. So we laid charges against all the MMs and the CFOs and all the executives of VBS and Vela Investments, for that matter, and subsequently all the people implicated in the Mattel report. Now, that's a constitutional obligation. It's one of the things that I swear when I'm sworn in as an MP to uphold the laws of the country. So I did that. And it's been confirmed by the SAPS that the matter has been escalated to their commercial crimes unit and to the Hawks, and it's been consolidated, and they are investigating all the evidence, which is exactly what I would expect them to do. They don't need to wait on your report for an investigation. When a case is opened, that is their responsibility to investigate, not to wait for the minister to decide is there a case here or not. It's their job, not yours. Secondly, Minister, we also tabled motions in every single council because we agree with you. It's not for you to say that people must be fired. It's not for the provincial executive to say people must be fired, and we've never called on you to do that. We tabled motions in every single municipal council that was affected, calling on them to suspend the officials involved and to investigate the matter. Now, in some of those municipalities, that's taken place, Giani. But in all the others, it's been rejected. And it's been rejected by your party, Minister. And this might be politicking. It might be politicking. But the fact of the matter is that municipalities have wasted hundreds and hundreds of millions of rand. And people are hurtful. They want people held accountable. And yet, those people are still sitting in positions of authority in municipalities across the length and breadth of South Africa. Now, my point is this. We need to make sure that they no longer have control of the finances of those municipalities. If they are able to treat municipal finances with such disdain and such contempt, then they should not be in control of municipal finances. And that's why it is necessary that they be suspended, and that's why it's necessary that those municipal councils take the decision to suspend them. And that is what we have been asking for. But there's a lack of political will, Minister, to take action against these officials. The provincial secretary of the ANC in Limpopo, on a debate with me on Radio 702 about this matter, he said, we're not going to take action against these people until the reports come out. All we asked was that they be suspended from playing with municipal money. He said, no. You have just said, we're not going to take action against anyone until we've finished our forensic investigations. Now, surely that is not responsible, Minister. Surely there is a need for us to take firm, decisive, bold steps here to make sure that these municipalities are functional, to make sure that no more money goes missing. That's what it boils down to. That's what we are asking for, Minister.
Honourable Minister.
Exactly my point. You're politicking. Yes, you are. You start by saying, why is the minister allowing these people to stay in the positions? What do I say to you? I said to the honourable member, those municipalities must take responsibility. Why are you then turning the thing around? You said, why are you allowing these people? You're asking the minister, why is he allowing? That's why I remind you of the constitutional obligation to make those municipalities take responsibility. That is what we must agree about. The municipalities, when they decide who must be suspended, they are right. We have asked them to do that. Now, if that is what they are doing, you can't then turn around and look at me and say, why haven't I acted on that? I'm saying there is a way of how these things have to be done. The question that you are raising about everywhere, my party, all other parties that are raising it are correct. When we say this was money destined for the poor, it was money for service delivery, we will not allow anyone to get away with it. Not just the DA, we as the African National Congress. The question is, well, that's why I say you need to be patient. And I'm saying to you, is there nothing wrong with you laying the charge, but the way you put your charge, it was political. The point of the matter is that at the point you are laying the charge,
you couldn't actually have a case proven. The police are escalating the matter simply because the special investigating unit will get the information that comes from the Reserve Bank investigation and the information that will make available to actually pull all the whole case together. At the end of the day, all of this information is going to add on to charges being properly investigated. If you lay a charge at any one time, you've got a right to do so. I'm just simply saying, at the time you laid the charge, you knew that there wasn't enough information about it. And I'm saying to you, the only way that will actually help this thing to move forward is when we take all of this information together with whatever the police can then go into the details of who said what. But when these reports come up, that's what's going to take the whole process forward. So that is the point that we're making. But we have also a constitutional obligation to make sure that all of these people are pursued, and they must be pursued by the law enforcement agencies. And in this case, we will actually have given additional information on all of this. I've just told you that the reports must come. When the reports must come, we'll act on this. But that does not stop anyone from being suspended. But I've given you a list of those who have already been suspended. Well, it's not one. I've given you several of them. I'm not saying it's enough. Well, I didn't say, what about Mahikeng? What about Madibe? What are you saying? The numbers, you must acknowledge when you've got factual information. I said to you, where me and you will agree is that we cannot tolerate this situation. But even me and you are going to argue about whether this is the adequate number of people that should have been charged or not, that have been acted upon or not. Of course, I told you, we're waiting for more and more information to come up so that more and more action must be taken. Okay, well, maybe that's your view. We can leave it at that. But the issue, as far as we are concerned, I'm not determining where you can lay a charge. I'm just making an opinion as to your stance. That's the politics of a party. That's the same. That's the same. No, I think I'm fine with that. The honourable member, he's serving his party. Here, our point is that at the end of the day, we are on the route to uproot all of this. We must be able to get everyone charged who is involved. And we said we want to ensure that that money is recovered. There can't be anything better than that. Then, of course, an interesting point you are raising, Honorable Mteto, really because of the issue of the KPMG history. I think you basically raised an issue. We will always be alert. We cannot say that there's a reason why any of those particular firms cannot be trusted. We believe that we must allow them to investigate only when we think that the information that they're coming up with and the report that they're bringing has got flaws. Then we might want to pick the issue up. But I think that the fact that one firm must have been seen to have been acting irresponsibly doesn't necessarily mean disqualify everybody. I think we go on a case-by-case basis. Actually, interestingly, I did ask the question to the governor whether they did see 1.5 or 2 billion rand moving and leaving the country. They were not aware, because I think their Financial Intelligence Center would have picked up something to that effect. I can't speak for them, but it was an immediate question which we asked to say, hey, but is this money still within the country? And they said, well, they're investigating, but they were not aware of any evidence of a huge amount of money of that nature leaving the country. So I can't say what the real situation is. Hopefully they will be the ones who can explain that matter. As far as I'm concerned, the reason why I'm very adamant that we must pursue each and every one of the people that are involved is because I think that it should be possible to find some investment, some assets, some account, something where we can actually link this money to. I think it's too close, it's too soon for us not to be able to trace this in any particular way. So from that point of view, I believe that the processes must unfold, and it must take us to a point where justice is done. And at the end of the day, what we can't tolerate is that this was destined to serve the poor. Most of those municipalities are very poor rural municipalities. At some point, one or another, this committee, this house, is going to be called upon to come and give support in situations where communities are already suffering as a result of some of this. So we must really do everything to recover the money as far as we can. But we also have confidence in the processes, both from the forensic point of view as well as from the special investigation unit, that the police will be able to get through to tell us what has happened. And so we must all support that whole process moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Well, it's very clear, Honourable Minister, that you engage from time to time on the report and many other issues relevant to that. And I think once the report is finalized, and then I think we'll present it again to the committee for engagement and have a discussion on some of the issues that are there. It is very clear that Honourable Ngwezi, that anyone anyway who is involved in any legal activities, surely the law enforcement agencies must deal with that person. And then, of course, we can't say here in Parliament we can't play politics. Parliament is about politics. Taking advantage of the situation, I think we'll accept that from time to time. And then we must deal with it correctly and concretely. And we are going to wait then to get a report. And then the report will be very helpful for us to address some of the challenges. And then we know that the people who are involved, since Kubisa was saying that they were learned, it's fine. But there are still some cars, Minister, somewhere. Maybe Melham should go and possess all these cars. There are many cars there. They are very beautiful cars. They are shoppers or helicopter. Surely all those things must be. Melham may set up system to do it. And but of course, really, Melham do have a right to play your politics. It's fine. The governing party also will have a right to defend the politics of it. I think the engagement will always continue that way. We are not in the church generally here. It's politics, and therefore we'll just support. But the issue, we all agree that what happened there is completely unacceptable. And then people responsible, Minister, soon as possible, we should arrest them. Once reports are out, they must be followed, they must be arrested, and they must be dealt with, and then we'll engage them to local authorities to address some of the challenges. I think the report is very detailed. It assists us a lot to see how the situation is. Of course, as there is a debate in the chamber, Minister, I know, on the very same issue of VPS, and the Honorable Matsipe, maybe we'll be participating in that debate, maybe Melam or whoever. I saw you are another member, Menier, was here also just to get more information for debate. The debate too is going to be a very exciting debate. But of course, again, dealing with matters really that worries all of us is a public matter now. The committee must deal with it, visit the areas, have discussion. Surely the mayors also must be accounting to give more information about some of the issues there. It would be very rare for a decision to be taken by CFO without the council sitting and taking a decision. Under normal circumstances, it doesn't happen on that matter. But I think there will be a situation that we have to do. Let us allow then the due process to take its course. The minister is around, is going to be giving us more information and have discussion about some of these issues. And then I think the report really has assisted us a lot. We know now what are the issues and the challenges that we are facing. And then when we call the mayors as we propose, they will come here having been informed ourselves, and then on the issues that are there and what we want to do with the situation. And then thank you very much, and thank you for the input and the discussion. Maybe we should adjourn the meeting. And hopefully in the chamber we are going to again engage on this issue. Mayhem, you are part of the debate as well.
Chair, I promise I won't be nice.
Won't be nice?
I won't be nice.
Okay. Okay, you play your politics, that will be fine.
Hallelujah. You know. Oh. Cool. Annika, I am so sorry. The first email I sent you was completely wrong. It's completely, completely. I don't know what it is.